Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
It's funny, Angel, bringing up the skydiving. I had forgotten that. When we were over at the Woodruff, we used to go once a year. We would get a group of about 30 people, and we'd go down about 75 miles south of Atlanta where they had a place, and you did tandem sky jumping. And the way all that started was there was a woman who had been coming to the center for a few years, and she was coming up on her 40th birthday, and I knew her pretty well, and she asked to talk to me, like a counseling kind of a thing, and I said, what's going on? And she said, I'm bored with my life. She says, I've been in the same job. It's a boring job. I've never had a relationship, 40 years old, had never had a relationship. She says, I'm living in a place that isn't very interesting. I don't really have any good friends, and I need to break out of this. And I said, well, why don't you do something interesting, like go skydiving? And her eyes got really big, and she said, I couldn't do that. And I said, why not? She said, well, blah, 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 sputter, sputter, and everything. I said, as a matter of fact, why don't you track down a good skydiving school, start collecting names, and we'll bring a whole group. And she said, okay. So we set a date for about 2 months from then when we were going to do it, and we started announcing it, and a lot of people reacted as Angela did and said, no way. Whatever, but some people were really excited. And anyway, we went. I'll condense this. But so we went. We all showed up on a Saturday morning, about 30, 35 of us. And I told her I would go out with her, first two people out of the first airplane, which we did. And you go up to 14,000 feet above the ground, which is really high when you're looking out the door, you know. And I was right in front of her, and each one of us hooked up to our instructor. And I jumped first, and then when I landed, I got to go over and talk to her right as she, and she was transformed. I mean, she was just glowing when I saw her when she touched the ground, and it really switched her whole life. I mean, a couple years later, she ended up having a relationship, getting married, she quit her job, did all this stuff, so it was interesting. I mean, it always fascinates me when I meet someone who doesn't seem to be enjoying life, and usually after talking to him for a few minutes, which I try to avoid, but sometimes you can't, it becomes very clear when you talk to them that life is not the problem. It's just that they're bored with their particular life or some particular part of it. I remember thinking back, I was putting this talk together, and I was thinking back to the first time I ever remember feeling bored during my school summer vacation, because it was the summer in between 5th and 6th grade, so I was about 10 years old. Up until then, the years before then, summer vacation was fabulous, as we all know, though I didn't really appreciate it. I mean, every day I had nothing to do but play. I didn't have to pay for anything. I didn't have a schedule. I could be anywhere I wanted. I could read books, watch television, play cards, all the stuff we used to do before the internet came out. You know, I could climb the orange trees that grew around our house. It had been an orange grove, but I was never bored. Always something to do, okay? But that summer, my father decided that I was old enough to start mowing lawns to earn my allowance. So I had to mow our lawn and my grandmother's lawn for free, and then I could get a few other clients, and I did that for money. And my younger brothers were just getting old enough to be a pain. I think they were 2 and 6 or so when I was 10. But my parents decided that they could go out a lot more now because they had a free permanent babysitter, which ended up being me when I was home during the summer. And the strangest thing of all for me was the year before, I had begun to enjoy school. I liked math. I liked taking tests. I was a really weird kid, you know, but I loved doing all that different stuff. And so by the end of the summer, I was absolutely horribly bored because all I was doing was smelling cut grass and changing diapers of a 2-year-old brother and all this kind of stuff. And I really, really, as soon as school started, I was dancing to the bus stop. In effect, that's kind of it. So, now, I've never enjoyed being bored, but some people do. It's kind of, it's a funny thing. It's not really an emotion. It's sort of a lack of emotion, okay? Tolstoy called it boredom the desire for desires, all right? Sometimes it can get so bad that we're willing to do almost anything just for a change of pace. The problem is, that's when we usually get into trouble. Now, if you think about it, we aren't always bored in the same way or by the same things. We can be bored having nothing to do, like being on a deserted island for all by ourselves or outside a doctor's office reading old magazines. On the other hand, we could be really, really busy doing the same thing over and over and over and be bored then. We can even be bored on a one-time basis by somebody who kind of comes up and grabs your attention and demands your attention and won't let you go, you know, and you're not really interested in what they're talking about. It's like when you go to a party, if you think back, you go into a party, you don't know anybody, but over in the corner you see this real hot number, okay? Make your own vision, whatever it is. And as you turn to go there, somebody intercepts and they start talking about things like computers or baseball or the stock market or something that you don't have any interest in, okay? And you have not just a mental reaction like, oh man, how do I get rid of this person? It's physical, you know? Everything seems to shut down. You just sit there. You have trouble breathing. So you can be bored if you're busy or not. You can be bored if you're alone or not, because boredom is not a function of what's happening around us or to us, as some people think. It's strictly a function of how much interest we have in whatever it is we happen to be doing. For example, if you went to the same party and that gorgeous creature in the corner came up to you and started talking to you about baseball or computers or whatever, you'd probably be really interested, you know, or a lot more interested than you would otherwise. And as for being on a deserted island, a lot of people pay a lot of money to stay on a deserted island for a week with nothing but a book and a bottle of rum, you know, so it's not unusual. Now, different things bore different people. We know that, just like different things interest different people, okay? And it's easy to say that we're the ones who pick the things we're interested in, but it's not so easy when we have to realize that we are the ones who choose the things we're not interested in, all right? Eric Fromm, the famous psychologist, had a statement. He said, humans are the only animal that can be bored. It's interesting. You go to a zoo and all the animals are perfectly happy doing whatever it is they're doing. There's a story, this will probably demonstrate what I'm talking about, and it's a story about a 747 captain. I used to be an airline pilot a long time ago, and he was a real senior pilot, and he was flying the route of the 747 from New York to Los Angeles. Then he stayed 18 hours in a five-star hotel. Then he got on the plane and flew it back the next day to New York. Now, he did this every Tuesday and Wednesday. He did it four times a month, and they paid him a lot of money to do it. So one day, on a Tuesday, he was flying, and they were about halfway through their trip, and he and the co-pilot had just had a first-class meal served by a delightful flight attendant. She went to get them their coffee, and the captain, you know, they were probably over Kansas, I guess, maybe 6 miles up in the air, and he said to the co-pilot, you see that little town down there? And he looks out the window, he says, yeah. He says, well, if you go up two squares and over one, you see that little pond or lake there? And he says, yeah. The captain said, when I was growing up, 8 years old, 9 years old, I'd go and stay on a farm, my grandfather's farm, on that little lake, and I'd sit out in my rowboat fishing, looking up, and I'd see these contrails going from east to west and west to east. And I was looking, and all I could think about is, I want to do that more than anything else in the world. And the co-pilot sort of nods his head and smiles because he understood. And the captain keeps looking out the window. He says, you know what? Right now, I wish I was down there fishing, you know? So he had everything good, but that's the choice he was making. That's the way we are. There are people who live in wonderful small towns with family and friends all around who are bored with their life. There are people living in the middle of a beautiful, vibrant city like Atlanta or New York or Chicago or anywhere else, and they're bored with their life. And if you took the two of them and asked them if they wanted to switch, they'd do it in a heartbeat because they would figure that it'd solve it. But 6 weeks later, they'd want to switch back. They'd find out that they were bored in the other place too, because we are very, very fickle, okay, about the things that bore us or interest us. They tend to change as we go through life, okay? In fact, eventually we even get bored by things that used to be incredibly exciting or interesting to us. And if you don't believe me, look at some of the relationships, you know, where people have been married for 40 years and they're absolutely bored with each other. You know, they wake up in the morning and they turn over to this person next to them who used to just make their heart race, somebody they absolutely adored, and they look at them and go, what did I ever see in them? And meanwhile, their partner's pretending to be asleep thinking the same thing about them. So this happens with a lot of people. I mean, it's just something that happens. On the other hand, something that bores us when we first experience it can later become something that changes our life. I know for me, I had to read Emerson during high school, and I hated it. Now I read Emerson all the time. I love it, that kind of stuff. And you've got your own examples, okay? Now, When we are unable to maintain interest in something, okay, it's usually not because of something that's present, it's because something is missing. We think there's something missing, okay? For example, when we're bored with a job, we think it's missing meaning. They're not using my talents, whatever it happens to be. If we're bored with a place, it's because there's no restaurants or no interesting people. All of that is missing. If we're bored with a person, you know, it's because the other person isn't providing something stimulating or interesting to me. In other words, whenever we aren't being stimulated by life, we're usually absolutely positive that the problem has to be out there. Nobody ever comes home from a party and says, boy, was I boring. Okay? Usually they blame it on the party. Now, I agree that if we're bored with something, it's a sign that something's missing, but it's not what most people think. All right? The things that are missing, if we're bored with some part of our life or some person, are obviously imagination and curiosity, not to mention desire, vision, and respect. So let me talk about those for a couple minutes. You see, we all have a natural desire to be interested in life, to do interesting things. All of us have that desire, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with wanting our mind to be stimulated. But we also have a tendency to be lazy and impatient. Things that we're involved with for a long time, like a marriage or a career maybe, start to feel stale after a while just because things aren't changing, okay? We start to take them for granted. When our day-to-day life doesn't feel interesting anymore and we long for a change, any sort of a change just to stir things up, we're doing it because we want to feel alive. We want something out there to make us feel alive. That's why even somebody who's got a really good relationship or a good job, will eventually, you read about it all the time, go out and do something like have an affair or yell at their boss or do something just to mix things up. And it only makes things worse, all right? Now, there's a very simple spiritual reason for this. People who do this kind of thing are looking outside of themselves to find a desire, all right, for kind of a fulfillment, but that only comes from within. Desire for things only comes from within, all right? You can't fill an inside hole with outside stuff, as I heard it said once. It's a great statement, really a great statement. We don't use our vision correctly. We talk about visualizing here. I'm not talking about eyesight. I'm talking about our ability to see and to comprehend, okay? Because we'll look at something very briefly on a surface level, especially nowadays at the speed everybody's moving, and we immediately categorize it. I don't like that kind of restaurant. I don't hang around that kind of people. I don't want to go to that kind of a whatever it happens to be, okay? So we categorize it as either relevant or irrelevant, interesting or not, whatever. And frequently that first impression is the foundation that we use to determine all of our future decisions about it. So if something doesn't catch our interest right off the bat, we don't give it a chance. We immediately start looking past it to try to find something else. The risk we take by doing this is that we might fail to see something really, really wonderful, that's just a little bit below the surface. We don't use our vision to look below the surface. You see, if we don't look at the big picture with our mind's eye, we're likely to miss some wonderful possibilities. Now, being bored also shows a lack of respect, not just for the thing we're bored with, but for ourselves, because we live in an incredibly abundant and interesting universe. We are a part of a power that created everything, everything we can imagine. This power that created the human body and created oceans and thunderstorms and hurricanes and all these different things. So being bored is a failure to recognize that the same mind that does all these things is also completely present in us and with the person or the thing that we're bored with. Now, the reason this is important to understand is because it means that we don't have to go somewhere else to put ourselves right smack dab in the middle of a life that's exciting and challenging and interesting and fulfilling and maybe even rewarding. Just like the young woman who, out of the blue, doing something she could never have imagined, jumped out of a perfectly good airplane. All right? It was wonderful to see. So we don't have to move to make our life more interesting. We don't have to change partners. We don't have to switch jobs. We can do those things. But we have to recognize that the power, the desire, which is really part of the nature of God, is always present wherever we are. wherever we are, okay, ready to present for our consideration more possibilities than we could ever imagine, and all we have to do is ask for it. That's what prayer is. It's asking for a better idea. You know, it's kind of funny. On the one hand, we say that some people will say they want an exciting, magnificent life, and on the other hand, all they do is say, no, I don't do that. I don't want to do that. It's really interesting. There was a woman by the name of Susan Ertz. She's an author, and she has one of my favorite quotes that I've ever read in metaphysics. She said, "Millions of people long for immortality who don't know what to do with themselves on a rainy Sunday afternoon." It's a really interesting statement, okay? We fall into the trap of believing that changing what's outside of us is going to stimulate our inside. But it doesn't work that way. At least not for long. If we don't change the way that we look at the world around us and other people, no matter what that world might look like in the short term, it's not going to change. And we won't change, okay? If we focus our mind only at the surface level of people and things and routines, at the routine level, whatever it is, those are the things that will occupy us. Those are the things that we'll continue to look at, and that's all we're going to see. It's kind of the difference between floating on a raft in the middle of the ocean, as opposed to putting on scuba gear and going down with the shipwrecks and the fishes and all the other stuff. It's the same ocean, but it's a different perspective, a completely different perspective. That's how we need to look at the world, because there's always so much more that lies below the surface. All right? Now, so where should we focus our thoughts and our attention if we want to see more that we aren't seeing? Okay, if we want to see more than just the world of appearances. A lot of the great spiritual teachers talked about this. Dr. Raymond Charles Barker, who was my teacher's teacher, wrote this in The Science of Successful Living. He said, "Spiritual thinkers have realized the importance of directing the mind, that's inner, to great ideas rather than keeping it at the level of daily routines that absorb you with the petty, the tiresome, and the disconcerting. Their advice has been to think of the nature of God, the living spirit within you, and of those elements of life that are creative and expanding and eternal." Are we focusing our mind on the amazing things that are all around us, okay? Now, we need to be real a little bit. Am I saying that every person we meet, we should consider to be fascinating and listen to their story with great interest? Not exactly, okay? There are some people in the world who can suck the life out of a room just by walking in it. And we all know it, okay? Rule number one is don't be one of those people, okay? But rule number two is when we see that, we may not want to be around that person, but we also have to realize that there are a lot more interesting people in the world than we tend to think. Or that we give credit for. Talk to people a little and ask questions. I remember I was doing some work with a charitable organization, and one of the things we did was set up groups of people to go visit nursing homes during holidays, during Christmas and Easter, because a lot of people in nursing homes don't have any family. So we went in, and on first impression, you walk in, and you got a bunch of people who are very old, just sort of sitting there staring at each other. But as you go and start to talk to them, there was a woman sitting in the corner, and I just started asking her questions. And she started telling me about her husband, who had been a Pan Am captain, and he was on an airplane that disappeared in the South Pacific. And she pulled out this scrapbook that had all these pictures back, you know, from 40, 50, 60 years ago. It was amazing. There was another woman I started talking to, and her hands were all gnarled, poor thing, and we got talking, and it turns out she had been a concert pianist in Hungary. Just amazing. You can find out so much stuff about different people, okay? You can also find out a lot of interesting things about people you don't agree with. Really and truly, you can start to get a little bit of empathy and perspective. Now, am I also saying that we should stay in a job that's kind of sucking the life out of us or not using our talents? Once again, no. But I will tell you this. Okay, you can always change, but until we find a way to make ourselves feel valuable and motivated in whatever job we're doing, we're never going to be able to attract something better. We have to transform ourselves inside before we can attract an entirely different situation. That's why somebody said there are no dead-end jobs, there are only dead-end people. That was my teacher. It's a very interesting statement. If we are expressing to the universe loud and clear wherever we are, I don't like this, I don't like them, whatever it happens to be, and that we are bored and unhappy and underutilized, that's what the universe is going to hear. All right, think of it as the cosmic waitress who says, what do you want? You tell her, and that's what she gives, and she gives you what you ask for. That's what the universe is doing. So if I'm walking around going, I'm bored, I don't like my job, I don't like my relationship, universe is going, check, 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 and it's going to keep going until we change, okay? When we don't feel mentally or spiritually stimulated, the funny thing is we tend to use our imagination less. We do. It gets kind of numb, sort of. We don't see new ideas. We don't open ourselves to new things. We let our imagination get weak, sort of like a muscle gets weak if you don't use it. Now, this doesn't have to be a permanent situation, okay? We can always change that. But in order to change it, we have to do something deliberately, something creative, something playful, like jumping out of a perfectly good airplane. Usually something like that is enough to get our creative juices going for us to feel a little more enthusiastic. If nothing else, it keeps us from going through the same old cycle of boredom, dissatisfaction, whining, boredom, dissatisfaction, whining. People get in that continual cycle. We can actually create an entirely new relationship with everyone and everything in our life, including the ones that we haven't been interested in. But we can only create this new relationship from in here instead of looking for it out there. When we finally figure out that we are the only ones who create our own mental stimulation, our own excitement and interest, we'll never have to waste another moment being bored with anything. Now, the truth is, and I was going to call Tom and have him do the song The Circle of Life, remember, where it says there's more to do than it can ever be done, more to see than it can ever be seen. There is so much more of life no matter where we are, but we have to open ourselves internally to it. Okay, there are books to read, there are movies to see, there are people to meet, countries to visit, all these different things. Okay, so the question is, like I said last week, what are we waiting for? We shouldn't be waiting for something to happen out there. We need to be waiting for something that happens in here. Even if we live to be 100 years old, which I intend to do, every moment is precious. William Blake, the great poet, he had a poem, and one of the verses was, you probably heard it, he said, "To see a world in a grain of sand and heaven in a wildflower, to hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour." Great statement. That's the way we need to look at the world and everybody who's in it. Wherever we are, whatever we're doing, whoever we're with, okay, we need to see God as life being completely present. That's first. And then we need to consciously choose how to express joy and gratitude and love and all these things in this moment and in this moment and in this moment. Because it's all in the now. It's all in the present. That's why we're here. We are here to laugh, to love, to learn, and play, not to worry, suffer, complain, and die, as some people seem to think. Once we get that part figured out, all we have to do then is to get ready to live a life that could be more fun than we could stand. Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't you like to be living a life that was more fun than you could stand? I certainly would, and that's what I'm trying to do, okay? And this is a great place to learn how to do it. So this is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. All right. Thank you. I want to take a moment now to talk about this past week a little bit, what happened, as we all know. In Las Vegas, obviously, is what I'm talking about. And as we see these things happening, going all the way back to Sandy Hook and all the other things, there are people who get caught up in the drama of it. They can't take their eyes off the screen, can't stop reading the stories, and they want to walk around and tell everybody, my God, it was so horrible. And they're trying. I heard several conversations this week where people were trying to top each other about some horrific aspect of it. Oh, yeah, did you hear this? Did you hear that? When something like this happens, we need to focus on the presence of God. I know that sounds religious, but I'm talking about the presence of life, the presence of love. Because starting Monday, what I started doing was reading all the stories about the people who were heroes, the people who saved others, the people who did all this, some of these people didn't survive either. But there are so many wonderful, beautiful parts in the midst of this horrific incident. And it's true with everything in terms of reading the news. So I'd like to do a treatment of meditation right now for us to focus on peace. Everybody with me on that? So relax. Everybody just take a moment, recognizing that even though we live in a world that has drama and pain and suffering, underneath it all, if we look, is the presence of a loving, beautiful, spiritual energy. I recognize that with the worst that could happen of humanity comes the best. And that's where I focus my attention. I recognize that my faith needs to be greater than my fear, as Angela said. So when something like this happens, I take control of my consciousness. I do not participate in the anger or the vengeance or the drama that so many people want to foster. I allow myself to feel truly grateful that there are people who are willing to risk themselves to help others, that there are first responders, there are police, there are doctors taking care of those who are injured. All of these people are the best of humanity dealing with the worst. So not only do I focus on that, I recognize that that is who I want to be. I want to contribute to the world simply by being in it. I want to offer everyone I meet the very best of myself. I want to offer everything I do the very best that I have. I want to allow myself to give love everywhere it's possible. And I want to allow myself to see the best. Because as I see the best and focus on the best, I give no power to the other. I give no power to the false ideas that people have. I give no power to the anger. I give no power to the hatred. And I especially give no power to the separation. Because I truly realize that we are all one. No matter what side we think we're on, we are all one with the one mind. And that mind can be elevated in us. So as I elevate my thoughts, I elevate my beliefs, and I elevate my behavior to a higher level, to a spiritual level. That is the power I have every moment. I focus on the best, I give my best, and I give thanks for the opportunity to know this, for the opportunity to bring to the world the very best that I have. I give thanks for all that I have been given and all that I have yet to give. As I do this, I touch others, and they join. This is how we change things. This is how we change things for the better. This is how we create a life in a world where violence has less and less of a place because we all recognize and honor one another. This is the power we have as human beings, but it is especially the power we all have as spiritual beings. So as I recognize this, I allow it to be my truth from this moment on, and I release this knowing into consciousness, letting it be so. Join me in saying, and so it is.